This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this show, Rosh Hashanah may look very different for many of us this year, but what are our shuls doing to prepare for it? Rabbi Alex Chapper of Boreham Wood and Elstree United will tell us. It's been a few weeks since ties between Israel and the UAE were normalised. How is trade progressing? That question and more will be answered by Dorian Barak, co-founder of the UAE Israel Business Council. There's a big night brewing for JW3. An array of stars will be performing to help raise funds for the Community and Culture Centre here in London. But what can we expect? Chief Executive Raymond Simonson will let us know. Have you noticed how Netflix has become a bit Jewish? Well, in a special feature, Supplements editor Bridget Grant looks at some of the content on the streaming service that has a Yiddish flair, and maybe even speaks to one or two of its stars. And as if all of that isn't enough, comedian Ashley Blaker is back with his take on life as we've come to know it. But first, it's time for a look through your copy of the Jewish News for this week. Joining me to go through it is editor Richard Ferrer and news editor Justin Cohen. Welcome to you both.
Hello, Phil.
Right, let us have a look first and foremost at the front page. And this week just feels depressing to say this to some degree, a bittersweet new year, because of course this is referring to the change in law and how it's going to affect Rosh Hashanah.
We've got to post a picture of Rabbi Eli Levin, who's the rabbi at South Hampstead. He's sounding the shofar. It's quite a shofar. I've never seen a shofar quite that big. And he's got a mask on, which shows the bittersweet nature of the headline. We have obviously gone through this ordeal as a community and as a country, as a planet for months and months now. I think its absence obviously is going to be most sharply felt in the next few weeks as we mark Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we mark them isolated from our family and friends. Boris Johnson yesterday saying that any assemblies of seven or more, you could end up being fined, even arrested. Obviously, that's going to scupper plans for everyone. Front pages today are all about Christmas being cancelled. Well, our headline on page six is for some this year, Rosh Hashanah is clearly going to be cancelled. Some synagogues have already only gone online. Others are going to allow congregants in, but very, very isolated and separated. Schools have gone back, but some individuals, even an entire year group, has been sent home to isolate. It's real baby steps in terms of getting back to normality. And I think a lot of people, including a lot of, like, you know, once and twice a year Jews now staying away, are really going to start to feel disconnected from their religion and their culture.
And of course, what we mustn't also forget as well is what the long-term impact of this is as well, because of course, tradition goes a long way in making sure that the religion survives in one way or another. And of course, Justin, if people are going to have to stow away this year, and okay, I'm not pessimistic, but possibly realistic, possibly next year, maybe the year after. Obviously, we hope not, but who knows? No one knows how long this is going to go on for. This could have a real lasting effect on Judaism.
I think you're right. I think at the moment we're not yet there. I don't think, you know, not being able to fulfill a tradition one year will set a trend. And certainly I think that the bounce back and people's willingness and enthusiasm about returning to physical spaces in the community will be, you know, doubled and tripled, you know, in future years as soon as they can do. But you're right, you know, we've already seen, I'm sure, what will become lasting impacts of the COVID crisis, in particular, organizations going more online or at least having a hybrid element online. One of the big events that will take place this week is the JW3 Big Night In, which will be a mixture of a physical element at the center, a very limited physical element, but mostly online and virtual. And, you know, there are advantages to that. You know, we could potentially see people being able to access communal events, communal initiatives more than was the case before. But certainly everyone I speak to is really missing that human contact at the moment.
Certainly are. Well, look, there's speaking of human contact, the Board of Deputies have been in contact with the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, and it's caused a bit of a ruckus, apparently. This on page two.
Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, one of the most important figures in government, one of the three big offices of state, has been invited to speak at an online event in conversation with Gillian Meron, the chief executive of the Board of Deputies. Nothing particularly unusual there, you might say, and I would kind of concur with that. This has generated quite a lot of blowback, particularly on social media, from people who feel that Priti Patel's statements around refugees and around asylum mean that she's not a fitting guest for the Board of Deputies, and that the Board of Deputies is somehow giving her a hechsher for her policies in inviting her. But the fact is, as I said, she is the Home Secretary. She is the person that's leading the fight against many of the issues that have concerned the community, anti-Semitism and others among them. And it would be wrong not to be engaging with her. So I don't quite understand this blowback. I think that people can engage with this event. People can ask her tough questions, I'm sure. And I'm sure and I hope that Gillian Meron will ask one or two tough questions with regards to her wider policies on asylum and so on.
Well, that's actually, so you've picked up on what I was going to suggest, frankly, is I'm not quite sure why people would have a problem with hosting an event with her when actually the Board of Deputies is probably one of the best placed organisations to remind the Home Secretary of the importance of work surrounding immigration and asylum. So actually, it's probably not a terrible idea to actually speak to her and challenge her on those very points. Let's go on to something completely different now. Pages 54 and 55, double page spread of the incredibly legendary Jackie Mason. What's he been up to, Rich?
Should we raise the spirits? Isn't this wonderful? We've got Jackie Mason, who has come out of retirement. I was one of the lucky ones to see him when he was performing, and I think he retired a few years ago. He has written a New Year's sermon for Jewish news readers. And when you read it, you can just shut your eyes and hear his kind of like guttural Yiddish East Coast sort of tones. And you can kind of imagine him on stage. Unfortunately, it appears he's a Trump supporter, Phil. I'll have to forgive him that aberration. But there's a section here where he is defending Donald Trump against his accusers, saying things like, "You don't like the way he sounds? Well, get earplugs, turn the volume off your TV. He doesn't even look like a president, so don't look at him. Is your TV broken?" Yeah, real fantastic Jackie Mason stuff. And I do apologize to Mr. Mason and the Mason estate for that poor impression of him.
I tend to encourage Richard to do that impression. That wasn't your best, Richard. I think in person it works better.
Okay, he has chosen his ideal dream dinner party lineup to break the fast with. So he's gone with Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Albert Einstein, Mark Twain, Ariel Sharon, and Benjamin Disraeli, which I think would be an interesting lineup. Your dream dinner party lineup. So who would you go for, Phil?
Well, I think top of that list would have to be Stephen Fry, because I think he would make a fascinating dinner guest. I could imagine that actually you just have to invite Stephen Fry and whoever else you invite. It doesn't really matter, because honestly, he'd be so full of wisdom and information. And just honestly, I don't think it matters who else you have there.
I'd go with, I don't know, Steve Jobs would be a good one.
That could be tricky.
John Lennon, dead or alive?
Absolutely. Are they still going?
You, Justin?
Oh, I see. You mean the guest could be dead or alive. I thought you meant the band. Sorry, yes, Justin, who would you go for?
I think I was thinking John McEnroe might be a rather entertaining dinner guest for Rosh Hashanah or another time. But I think Jackie Mason picked out quite a few of those that I would have chosen. Obviously, Churchill would have been amazing.
Fantastic. Would have loved to have met Churchill. That would have been incredible. Actually, do you know who else I would have loved to have met, and also who I'd have loved to have at a dinner party? Bob Monkhouse. What class. What class.
Bruce Forsyth as well, maybe, then, in the same vein.
Lenny Henry. I've always wanted to meet Lenny Henry. I've always been fascinated by him. Anyway, we can go on.
I was going to say, we can talk about this all day.
Jack Mason, come out of retirement for the Jewish News this week.
Excellent work. Well, he's on page 54 and 55, double page spread for him, quite rightly so. But sadly, that's all we've got time for a look at the paper for this week. But thank you both very much indeed. Don't forget that you can always collect your copy of the Jewish News every Thursday. And if you are isolating, then you can always read the full paper as it would be in print online at jewishnews.co.uk. Editor Richard Ferrer, news editor Justin Cohen, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you very much.
What was that?
I don't know. It was a bit too much Jackie there. I do apologise. Thanks, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, families will be spending the Jewish New Year apart after the government announced a ban on social gatherings of more than six people. Rolling back the recent easing of lockdown, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has told the nation that from Monday, it will become illegal to assemble in groups of seven or more anywhere in England. Of course, this is a bit of a blow, to say the least, for those who maybe had plans for Rosh Hashanah. But let's find out what the community at large is doing to prepare for it, because I'm delighted to say that we're joined now by Rabbi Alex Chapper of Boreham Wood and Elstree United Synagogue. Rabbi Chapper, first and foremost, thank you very much indeed for speaking to me on the Jewish News Podcast. First of all, what's Rosh Hashanah even going to look like this year? We're not really going to be allowed in shul, so what can we do?
Well, yes, you're right. It's going to be very different to any year we've been previously used to. But I'm glad to say that if you drill down into the government guidelines, we are still allowed to hold services in synagogue over Rosh Hashanah. Obviously, we will be observing all the government guidelines in terms of social distancing, sanitizing. Also, the United Synagogue has also laid down many guidelines for us, and we'll be following those, as we have been since we've been allowed back into synagogue. So we will be following those over Rosh Hashanah as well. So we will be observing 2 meter distance in between. There will be fogging of the shul and all the buildings that we'll be using, cleaning in between, and numbers will be severely restricted in order to make sure we observe social distancing, maintain those distances, keep everybody safe. We're confident that we're doing it in a COVID secure way.
So how does it work in a practical level then? Because ordinarily, Rosh Hashanah, the High Holy Days, we're obviously all used to certain members of the community who are the twice yearly brigade, as we like to nickname them. And as a result of it, the synagogue is at its most popular over Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and obviously Kol Nidre as well. But the point is that it's normally packed. So how is it going to work maintaining social distancing if you can't pack out the synagogue?
Okay, so you're right. So Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are particularly popular times for the community to come. You're right that normally the synagogue is packed and overflowing, and we use multiple sites. As you're right, since we've been now back into synagogue, we've not been able to have the shul to be full, and similar over Rosh Hashanah. So people have had to book. People have to book and say when and where they want to come. We're offering them a number of different alternative services, from a 2.5 hour service to an hour long service. And the numbers will be severely restricted. We have in Boreham Wood, because we've got large numbers, we'll be using 3 different sites. So the Croxdale Road site, the Yavna College site, and we've also hired out Alum Hall, which is a local hall. And we'll be having a number of different services throughout the day over those sites in order to give the largest possible capacity, so the largest number of people possible are able to come. But at each individual service, the numbers will be severely restricted because safety is our main concern, and we have to maintain the social distancing.
Give us a little preview into the sort of preparations that have gone into making this possible, because this sounds like an awful lot of work, I'm guessing, in a very short space of time. And I'd imagine that based on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, all the High Holy Days are normally the busiest time for you and your rabbinic colleagues at the best of times. What on earth has it been like to your workload to try and make sure, and of course your colleagues as well, to make sure that this is all good to go?
Yes, well, you're absolutely right. So this year, for both the rabbinic and the lay leadership, it's been a huge effort. I sort of coined the phrase that we've been reinventing Yom Tov this year. So it's as if we started with a blank piece of paper and said, how do you do Yom Tov? So we had to look at it all again. So starting off with realizing that, because everybody has to wear a face mask while they're inside the synagogue, how long is it possible to sit and enjoy a service while you're wearing a face mask? And we decided that, you know, really any more than an hour or so, it becomes, you know, the sort of the graph of enjoyment will drop severely once you reach a certain amount. So the majority of our services will be like a highlight. So we're calling it an essential service. It'll be high impact. It'll be all the aspects of the service people normally enjoy and come for. So the tunes people are familiar with, the prayers people are familiar with, the opportunity for people to have private and silent reflection, to hear the shofar on the second day, to hear the rabbi say a few words of inspiration. But we're really cutting back. So we've devised a brand new format with the agreement and authority of the London Bet Din, in order that we can pack in as much as we can into a short space of time. So people get the sense and the experience of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but we're doing it in a way which firstly is manageable, it's safe, and we hope will remain enjoyable. But you're right, we started with a blank piece of paper almost. And we've had to be very strict in terms of limiting the number of people, and everybody is expected to book. Anybody who is has any symptoms or has been near anyone who's any symptoms, anybody who is shielding or is concerned about their health, we've advised they don't come.
See, I wonder how this works on a halachic level, because for me, the whole experience of, and I should declare right now, I'm pretty much a weekly attender of synagogue. So for me, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and all of that, very good, is absolutely sort of the one of the pivotal moments of the year. And obviously the hours that we spend in synagogue, particularly over Yom Kippur, it just feels as though, will it be authentic if we're going to start breaking it down into hour-long services? And are we going to be skipping bits that we shouldn't be skipping? And how does it work from a halakhic sense?
So as I said, all the innovations we've done in terms of cutting down the services have been done with the approval of the London Beth Din. And recognizing that we're living in extraordinary times, that if you think back to March, April time, we had no synagogue services whatsoever. So everything really should be seen as a bonus. And that's what we're taking it. You know, we are very fortunate that we are able to continue to have synagogue services, even though social gatherings, as we said, are severely restricted. There'll be none of the social aspects of communal life. There won't be, people won't be able to socialize either in the building or around the building. And we're going to be reminding people of their social responsibility, because we have also, we've got to be very careful to be seen by the wider community that we are not only are we observing the rules, but we are taking this seriously. And therefore, even though we are within the buildings, we are 100% COVID secure. We'll be asking people on the way to shul and on the way home to also think about their behavior and take responsibility for it and not congregate. You know, Jewish people like to schmooze. There cannot be any schmoozing this year, I'm afraid. But what we've done to try and enhance the experience is programming before and in order to encouraging people to actually make their homes the center of their celebrations of Yom Tov this year. So we're putting together, we've got a group of volunteers that are actually now packs of 1,400 families who will all get a delivery hopefully on Sunday in the beginning of next week, which will have things in there that will help them to enhance their experience while at home.
Just finally, Rabbi Chapa, you mentioned earlier on about those who want to experience words of wisdom from the rabbi. What have you got to say to those watching now who maybe are feeling a little bit nervous about the concept of what may happen over Rosh Hashanah, what it would mean to them, and how they get through it? What would you like to say to those right now?
You know, normally on Rosh Hashanah, we try and predict what's going to happen in the coming year. We think ahead and we plan out our year. This year has shown us we can't predict. No one could have ever predicted this was going to happen this year. So I think this year we should really, in all humility, realize that rather than try and predict the coming year, we should actually try and create it, make the best of it, make the best of ourselves, and therefore make the best of the year. You know, we can't control what goes on around us. You know, this, you know, we thought that terrorism was going to be the greatest threat to the Western society. We've now actually seen an invisible virus is an even greater threat. It shut down everything. So I think it reminds us that we're not in control. We should sometimes have perhaps a bit more faith in God, that God is in control, but also to be partners with God, that we were created in God's image, and to remember that God wants us also to create the world in which we live, that just as God created the world for us, we create the world for ourselves as well, for other people around us. And perhaps this year, we've seen some of the great examples of human behavior this year, the kindness and generosity and sympathy for others. Hopefully that will continue and we grow and build on that and create a better world in the coming year.
Rabbi Alex Chapa of Boreham Wood and Elstree United Synagogue, Shana Tova to you and your community, and thank you very much indeed for speaking.
Shana Tova to you and to all the listeners of Jewish News.
Thank you very much for speaking to us on the Jewish News podcast.
Thank you.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, speaking of worldwide, let us have a look at how relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates are developing, because it's been a few weeks since we learnt the incredible news that relations between the two countries had been normalised. But what has been occurring over that time? Well, Dorian Barak is the co-founder of the UAE-Israel Business Council, and I'm delighted to say that he joins us now. Dorian, let's start off with that very question. What has been happening over the last few weeks since this news broke?
Well, the biggest thing that's happened is relations that were taking place under the surface
in a slightly non-transparent, opaque way, have now come to the fore and are taking place fully in the open. Just to give you an example, I was in Dubai yesterday, and a friend of mine who runs the Jewish community there, Ross Creel, and I met, and he walked into the room, into the hotel lobby, wearing his kippah. And a bunch of Emiratis came around us, and they said, "Who are you?" And I said, quite cheekily, "We are the vanguard of the new Israel-UAE relationship." And they were delighted. They wanted to introduce themselves. They shared their business cards. They asked what areas we're active in, and they said, "You know, how can we collaborate now that things take place in the open?"
You know, I have to tell you that I obviously have spoken about this for a couple of weeks now in one way or another with different people, and I don't stop having the most enormous smile on my face when I just think that Israel and the UAE have normalized relations. It just feels so odd to say it even now after all this time. I just wonder what it's like to be in the thick of it when you're actually in Dubai and sort of seeing people face to face, knowing full well that there's no, well, there shouldn't be, let's put it this way, any tension between the two countries now.
That's absolutely the case. You know, it's interesting because I've always been pretty open. Number one, people can Google me and see all kinds of information. I'm on boards of companies in Israel. I've been active in the UAE now for a decade, managing funds, shareholders in companies that are very active there. And people always knew who I was. But when we would sit in a public place or when we would meet someone who was not in our immediate circle, when we mentioned the word Israel, we'd say somewhat in a hush, we'd say Israel, though everyone around the table knew what we were talking about. It is completely different today. In fact, UAE people are looking, Emiratis are looking for Israelis as Israelis, meaning other things being equal, they'd rather work with an Israeli. It's consistent with the government policy. There's a novelty aspect to it. And there's a real appreciation that something very special is being built. For me, this is, you know, personally very, very satisfying. We started the UAE-Israel Business Council about 3 months ago, 3.5 months ago. And we reached out to Emiratis, with whom we've been working for a long time. Everyone thought it was a great idea. But they said, let's start it slowly. Let's start it a little bit beneath the surface. And let's come out, you know, very carefully. Because everyone knows what's going on, but people were uncomfortable stating so publicly. All that changed in a minute when the announcement was made. And everything came to the fore. You can imagine the excitement I feel personally, but I think for Israel, for the region, for the Emirates, and for all of us, it's a delightful development and it's very personally rewarding.
It's incredible. I mean, this is the week that we hear that President Donald Trump potentially may be receiving the Nobel Peace Prize because of his part in played in this. It's just mind-blowing to think that this is what we're talking about right here and now. If we look to the work that your organization does, you mentioned it just now, the UAE Israel Business Council, obviously it does what it says on the tin, but talk us through some of the workings of the organization, because why do we need it as opposed to, say, individuals approaching other individuals? Do you see what I mean?
It's a very, very good question. The main reason is the founders of the UAE Israel Business Council are a collection of people who have been engaging with Emiratis, Arabs from the Gulf, and the region generally, who have special relationships and are able to bridge in a way that's very effective between Emiratis who still have some apprehension in dealing with Israelis whom they don't know. Don't forget that the Emirates is a place where business is based on personal relations, meaning an introduction from someone you know and trust is validation that the person on the other side is, generally speaking, someone they can do business with. That's very important. You know, Israeli society is much more transactional. You get someone's name, you see someone's website, you hear that someone knows someone, you reach out directly. There's really no fear that the person on the other side is not who they represent themselves to be or someone that can't be trusted. In the Emirates, it's very different. Business is done with partners, friends, long-term, you know, deep relationships. It's not something that's purely transactional. You know, in Israel, you can have a bar mitzvah and hire a photographer online. That's not something that happens in the Emirates, just to choose a very simple example. And you can imagine if you're talking about trade, which involves trade finance, it involves import-export paperwork, you really want to make sure the person on the other side is someone trustworthy who's been engaged in this before. And you want to know that someone you trust and know can hold the other person accountable for disappointing or succeeding in achieving what is expected.
Now, let's look to the future. Okay, because the future is, I think, from what I've seen and heard, really bright here. And I just wonder how you feel about it. What do you think is going to happen? Your prediction moving forward, now that we've already seen what it's like for a couple of weeks now, the two countries working together, hand in hand, side by side, whichever way you want to look at it, what do you think the future holds for the two countries, for Israel and the UAE?
You know, I think some of the initial excitement may be over-exuberant. The Emirates has access to the technologies, the capabilities that Israel offers, but which other people offer as well. And in some cases, the Israeli solutions are no better than that which they can achieve elsewhere. So I think people are going to sober up a bit, and they'll begin taking things in a much more methodical, serious way, comparing the Israeli solutions and opportunities they see with opportunities from elsewhere. I still think they're going to find that in many cases, Israeli supplies, goods, investment opportunities, in some cases, in many cases, they're going to find that there are really exceptional things they can do with the Israelis. But it's going to take them some time before they can, you know, in a sober way, reflect on a particular opportunity and say, is this something I really want to do? On the Israeli side, I think Israelis believe that, to quote an Israeli expression, Israelis believe in some ways they've discovered America, meaning they've discovered a new market that has endless opportunities. In some cases, that's right. But in many cases, you're going to find that it's just as difficult to do business in UAE as it is to do elsewhere. It's a competitive environment. You really got to be the best or offer a compelling value proposition. And Israelis will find that it's not so easy to penetrate that market. But at the same time, there is something very, very special about Israeli capabilities, the can-do attitude, the forward thinking, and the chutzpah about just getting out there and doing business, which I think is going to be very successful in the Emirates. I would only add to that that over time, this will build, and the Israelis will discover in the Emirates a market that holds opportunities which they didn't initially expect. Let me give you an example. If you speak to most Israeli, you know, small-scale manufacturing or startup companies, particularly in the technology space, you ask them what they expect to get at the Emirates, the first thing that everyone's going to think about is capital, funding, investment. I think that's true to some extent, but I think there's something much greater than that, which is using the Emirates as a base or as a hub for targeting markets that until now were very difficult for Israelis to penetrate, but which tend to be concentrated in Dubai and in Abu Dhabi. So in many respects, Dubai is the capital of the region, of the whole Indian Ocean basin. If you want to do business in the subcontinent, the Indian subcontinent, Pakistan, the greater Middle East, East Africa, there is no better place than Dubai. And many international companies put their regional headquarters there. That's something that's been denied to Israelis until now, and it opens up an incredible range of opportunities for them.
An incredible range that I personally can't wait to see unfold before us in the years to come. Dorian Barak, co-founder of the UAE Israel Business Council, thank you so much for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you as well.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, obviously, a lot of us are a bit down and a bit flat about the new restrictions being imposed by the government to ensure that no more than groups of six meet at any one time. However, that doesn't mean that there aren't still cultural events going on wherever they can, and possibly in new ways as well. Our very own JW3 has had to close its doors officially since March, but slowly but surely, we are seeing life come back to some sense of normality, and I'm delighted to say that to tell us about their latest event, which is simply known as the Big Night In, is the chief executive of JW3, Raymond Simonson, joins me now. Raymond, what a pleasure to have you on the Jewish News Podcast, as ever it is to talk to you. Let's first and foremost establish life at JW3. It's been far from quiet over the last few months, even if the doors have been shut.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me back. Great to see you and hear you again. Yes, we closed the doors to the building, to the public, but we remained open, as you know, online as a virtual JCC, as we've previously discussed. And we kept the building open for all of our social action work. In fact, Phil, I'm delighted that I'm with you today because we have just delivered our 50,000th meal.
Right,
and that's so. From our food bank since we locked down. So we're now past the 50,000 mark, which is just, if you'd have told me that 6 months ago, I'd have put you in my sugar. So that's going on. And slowly over the last week, after 5 weeks of summer camps for children, we've now been over the last week slowly reopening for some activities back in the building with some comedy and family programming. But it's very, very slowly and carefully.
And it must feel pretty strange, I should imagine, as well, after such a long period of time of having to adjust to this new way. And now suddenly the doors are, like I said, I don't think it's not fair to say the doors are open. The doors are creeping open, aren't they? Is the best way to put it.
The phrase that my director of marketing says is, we are open as unusual.
I love that.
And yeah, so we have, look, we've had our first handful of events. You know, last Sunday we had 100 people at different points during the day in the building, which was incredible after 6 months. But when you think about before COVID, we would get 4,000 to 4,500 people a week through our doors. I think it's going to be quite a while before we get back there. The one good thing I would say is my colleagues here have blown me away by how hard they've worked to make sure that we have a COVID safe building, with the cleaning and PPE and hand gels and signage and mask rules and everything else in place. We are confident that we can welcome people back very safely. If people follow the rules, then they can have a fantastic communal and cultural experience again.
Now, speaking of communal and cultural experience, JW3's Big Night In, that is tonight, Thursday the 10th of September. So I apologize if you're listening to this podcast after the 10th of September, but frankly, you've missed it. But even so, let's hear about it. What are we going to expect from this? This sounds massive.
But the good news is first that if you're listening to this after and you've missed it, it is going to still be on JW3's Facebook page and YouTube page. And the YouTube page will have subtitles, closed captions for those who enhance their experience if they struggle with hearing. So you can still watch it. We decided that about 4 weeks ago, actually, we've held back from our fundraising efforts now for quite some time to allow others to do it. But now's the time to stick our head above the parapet. We need to give people a really good night where people can enjoy themselves after 6 very difficult months. So we pulled together as much talent as we possibly could from within the talented Jewish community and outside. So everyone from, you know, our great friend Tracy Ann Oberman, who's hosting it. We've got Boy George, Stephen Fry, Imelda Staunton, Jim Carter, Mark Ronson, Simon Callow, Adam Kay, the doctor turned comedian. We've got Jason Isaacs, Alex Edelman, Shappy Corsandi, Victoria Corin Mitchell, G4, and a whole bunch of surprises, including, I don't want to give it away too much, but a lovely surprise guest appearance from Jim, the next door neighbour, on Friday Night Dinners, in one of my favourite segments of the night.
Excellent work. Now, I have to tell you, you have disappointed me, because I was rather hoping that you would have at least had a half decent lineup for this evening, you know. But yeah. Even so, I mean,
I know, we're slacking. Yeah. We're slacking. Listen, Phil, it's not easy. I'm working remotely. This is all I could put together in 4 weeks. So I hope you can forgive me. And I have to say, because you mentioned Genesis Philanthropy Group at the start, and I've got to say, they have just really floored us with their generosity, because we had a chat with them about the event a few weeks ago, about the possibility of maybe a little bit of match funding. And they've come in, as you may have read, with £100,000 of match funding. So the very first, every penny anybody gives up to that first £100,000 will be doubled. So anybody that can give us a fiver, a tenner, £20, £30, whatever it might be, that money maybe some people were saving by not having all this Starbucks or going on the tube or bus. We know it's not easy for everyone, and everyone is, you know, got different circumstances. If somebody can only give us a quid, that would be fantastic. It'll get doubled and be £2.
But you know that it's very easy for people to forget, just because of the extraordinary way that JW3 conducts itself, that JW3 is first and foremost a charity and relies on donation.
Exactly. Where we are fortunate is, unlike a lot of charities, we don't have to fundraise 100% of what we need to fulfill our charitable objectives. We actually, in good times, can raise close to 50%, sometimes over 50%, from our commercial activities or from ticket sales. But of course, the minute the doors are closed, all the bar and bat mitzvahs and weddings were cancelled, the restaurant had to close, all of the things we usually do, venue hire, anything else that brings in money apart from the fundraising, that all stopped. And we have done hundreds and hundreds of hours of online activity, reaching thousands of people, of which over 90% of that activity has been free. It costs us, but it doesn't cost members of the public. That, on top of the food bank, which of course costs us to run, and our security, means that as a charity, even though we've reduced our costs as much as we can, we do have to fundraise. And it's not about, I've been saying to people, it's not in order to help JW3 survive, because we've done very well looking after our finances. It's in order to make sure that we can thrive and that we can respond to the need from the community over the coming years.
Just let us know a little bit about, you've obviously told us the fantastic lineup, but what can we expect from this evening? How's it going to work? You've mentioned all these great names, but how will they be presented to us?
Yeah. So it will kick off at 8 o'clock. You can watch it on JW3's Facebook page or on our YouTube channel. Go to our website and imagine like a really great chat show evening. Right, it's got a bit of a taste of a chat show, a bit of a taste of a kind of a comic relief or one of those kind of telethon events where Tracy Ann is hosting it. I am just her unglamorous assistant popping up every now and then. And she'll bring on different guests like Jason Isaacs or Stephen Fry. And for 10 minutes or so, they'll have some conversation. There's some stand-up comedy. There are some musical performances. There are a few surprises still to come. Most guests will be on for 5 to 10 minutes, that kind of thing. Simon Callow, I'm not going to give it away, but Simon Callow has prepared a stunning reading from a fantastic piece of Anglo-Jewish literature. That's all I'm going to say on it. And to hear it read in his mellifluous voice is just dreamy.
Well, I think we very much look forward to it. Anyone wants more information, I'm guessing the place to be is jw3.org.uk.
Yeah, and if you want the quickest way to get there, it's then /big-night-in. And what I'd love to do is not only do I want everybody to at home to watch it and enjoy it, and you can connect your computers to your TVs for the big screen experience, but please, if you use social media, please tweet about it and stick it on Facebook. The more people we can get watching this, whether they're Jewish, whether they're not, whether they live in the UK or abroad, then the more of a big, fat, communal experience we can have and the more money we can raise, which we will put to very good use for our charitable activities.
Excellent. Well, I have to tell you that I find myself really missing and almost borderline pining for my at least once a month visits to JW3. And I cannot wait until I can see all of you guys again in person and also experience life at JW3 as we knew and loved and will do so again one day, please God.
Absolutely. We look forward to seeing you here with your mask on, socially distanced, with a big smile on our faces.
Deal. Raymond Simonson, Chief Executive of JW3. Thank you so much and best of luck for this evening for the big night in JW3. Thank you. This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, I don't know about you. Is it just me or has Netflix got, well, a little bit Jewish? What am I talking about? Well, you of course know Netflix as the streaming service that provides many entertaining hours to the masses. And I've noticed in recent months, and I don't think I'm the only one, that some of the content has all got a little bit Yiddisher. Joining me now to discuss this a little bit further, and also she may have even spoken to one or two of those stars, is Supplements editor Bridget Grant. Bridget, I'm not imagining this. There's a lot of stuff on Netflix, apart from Shtizel, Somebody Feed Phil. Then we've got Friday Night Dinner. There's loads of stuff on Netflix that's got a bit of a Jewish theme to it.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Phil Rosenthal, who appears in Somebody Feed Phil, actually joked with me about the fact that if he didn't know better, if you believed in conspiracy theories, you might think that Netflix had something to do with the arrival of COVID. And then when I laughed, he said, "Thank God you laughed." He said, "Because there's nothing worse than having to explain a joke." And he said, "That's the death of comedy." And in fact, it is.
So we may as well talk about Somebody Feed Phil, because I've got to be honest, I didn't know we were going to be talking about this week. I found out pretty much only a few hours ago that you and I were going to be discussing this program. One of my favorites. If you haven't seen Somebody Feed Phil, it is the most simple concept, yet brilliant concept, in my humble opinion. You have Phil Rosenthal, who's the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond, amongst other things. Very, very funny individual, not necessarily known himself on screen all the time because he's writing a lot of the time, but he travels around the world, loads of different countries he goes to, and he samples cuisine. But that's pretty much it. But what I love about it, Bridget, and I don't know whether or not if you sort of think that this is what its je ne sais quoi is, he doesn't have the stuffiness that usual food programs have. So he doesn't say, "Oh, I can taste essence of urchin" or something like that. He doesn't come up with any of that. What he does instead is he reacts in a human way. He'll go, this is amazing, that kind of thing. And you feel that you're actually experiencing it more with him than you are if you couldn't relate to the language being used.
Absolutely. I said to him that what he did during lockdown, when none of us could go out to eat in any restaurants anywhere, he opened up the globe to us and he allowed us to go to those restaurants. He goes all around the world, often seeking out the Jewish restaurant in the city that he's in. And apart from the fact that he does do exactly as you say, He is the gastronomic equivalent of Mr. Bean, because he just ums and ahs and just like, you know, it's yummy. It's just yummy. You want to taste it. So I asked him about that. And I also asked him about the invitations that he gets now since he's traveled to so many places.
I really do. And not just chefs, but people invite me to their house.
Aww. Have you gone to any houses?
Well, you see in the show.
Oh, my God. But the, I suppose if there was a New Year message that you were going to kind of give your followers, your foodie followers, yes. What do you think that would be?
I want you to watch the show. I want you to plan your trip the way you would have before COVID, because this will end. And I want you to see how beautiful the world is and that it is going to be waiting for you.
Oh, he just must have the best job. Now, it's not only somebody, Feed Phil, that you've been dipping the toe into the proverbial Netflix water with, because you've also been speaking to the people behind, well, arguably one of the most popular programmes on it, Stizzle.
Remarkably popular, and more people hooked onto it. I'm actually on the fan site on Facebook, and that is a global enterprise. I mean, they're literally anywhere. I once asked where they all were, and you know, it comes up Brazil and it comes up China. It's extraordinary global audience. But I got to speak to Dov Glickman only last week. Dov Glickman plays Shulam Stizel, the father, the patriarch of this wonderful show about the Orthodox Jewish community in Jerusalem. And he was, Phil, no secret, I fell in love. I did fall in love. But more to the point, they sign a confidentiality agreement, because even fans don't want to know what's happening in season three. But there were a few, well, I pushed, and there was a little thing that he told me about what's different about Shulam in this next season three.
My nature as an actor is always changing text, really, really, especially, and I'm generally, mostly, I'm a comedian. So I must bring it from myself, and I change a lot. Here, I didn't change anything, really anything, because it's perfect. Really, it's genial. It's 10, because it, also the story and the dialogue and everything, they invited. Hebrew is a tough language. There's not really an understatement in Hebrew. And they invited understatement in Hebrew and their text. The only suggestion that I had for this season is that I stopped smoking. This guy smokes a lot.
Yeah.
Shulam smokes really, really a lot. And I enjoyed the other seasons so much, to smoke there while they were shooting. I mean, it was great. And I stopped smoking. And smoke is really disturbs me now. When someone else, so I had a suggestion, and they accepted it. I'll have to stop smoking, and I'll become very nervous because of it. So this they accepted, but not all over the season, just for a part. So I smoked less,
yeah.
But I still smoked here.
Ah, so a little taster for you Stizzle fans out there, what we can expect moving forward. But he wasn't the only Stizzleite, is that what we're calling them, that you spoke to?
Well, that I was lucky enough, the Rosh Hashanah magazine for Jewish News, the cover is shot by a wonderful photographer called Moses Pinasilik, who actually in lockdown did a socially distanced shoot with Dov Glickman and Sasson Gabe, who plays his brother, Nuchum. He's the one that everyone boos when he comes on the screen. He's the pantomime villain. I spoke to Sasson as well, who had gone to New York to talk about work. He's been on Broadway and on a national tour. And I spoke to him about what we can expect from the evil brother in the next season.
Nuchum, yes. He's a funny character. You know, so as I told you, we just finished shooting the third season. And it's going to be, I think, very, very interesting, poetic as usual. And also about Nuchum, you know, and we signed the secret things and not to reveal things.
No, you mustn't. You mustn't. Yeah. one thing only. Does he become more likeable?
Well, look, it's a challenge for me to do this character, which is he's very money-minded, and he's very egoist and very self-centered man. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't see anyone besides his ego and himself. But it was quite a difficult job and to do it, and at the same time to find something appealing about this character, something that likable for the audience.
You know what I like about Sasson's ability to act is that I don't know whether or not this is going to sound horrible, because I don't know whether or not it's just the way he looks or whether or not it's something within him that's so deep and his acting ability is so great that you feel the evil when he's on screen. Does that sound really silly? But do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he does that. I mean, they're the best of friends, and they have been for years, Dov and Sasson, veteran Israeli actors. I mean, I spoke to Dov, obviously, about what it was about. Was it possible to even remotely like Nahum as a character or to forgive him his indiscretions? Because it's great to have someone to hate. He's the dirty den of Stiesel, in essence, really. So, I mean, I'd make all these equations light with light. What I must say is that they were both utterly amazing in terms of their ability to talk about being actors who have been not rediscovered, because they've always had a presence in Israel. But for these two actors, as Dov said, he believes this is the role of his life. And he has had a prolific film career,
which is amazing, really, when you consider it. I think that's all we've got time for. Can you believe you and I have managed to speak 10 minutes about television? There you go. You don't get that every week in the Jewish News podcast.
You've got to have him sending my... He tells me he loves me, though, Phil. Yeah. At one point, he tells me he loves me. Phil Glickman loves me.
Now I'm falling in love with you, too.
Excellent. I'm very pleased to hear that. What can I say? I don't know how to respond to that other than excellent. Thank you very much, Bridget. For more on that, I'm assuming that we'll be able to see some more about your interviews with all of them in the Rosh Hashanah magazine.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I mean, if you didn't pick it up this week, contact me. My email's on the front of the newspaper, and I will personally get it to your house. I don't want anyone to miss this. It's beautiful.
Well, there you go. You can't get better than that. Or, of course, jewishnews.co.uk. Supplements editor, Bridget Grant, thank you very much.
So welcome, Phil.
This is the Jewish News podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Time now for a little light relief in the form of comedian Ashley Blaker, as he gives us his take on life as we've come to know it.
Hello, friends. Ashley Blaker here, back on the Jewish News podcast. I'm enjoying saying that. Jewish News podcast, back on the Jewish... I feel like I'm a Radio 1 DJ. Oh, channeling my inner Pat Sharp. Anyway... Here I am, and it's an interesting time at the moment in the Blaker household, because new regulations that start on Monday are banning gatherings of more than six people, but there are eight of us in this house. So it's with great regret that we've decided to let go of our two eldest children, and we wish them well with their future endeavours. Anyway, I've had quite a lot of emails this week after last week's podcast, in which I talked about getting a television back. People didn't believe me that we haven't had a TV for many years, particularly due to the fact that I work in and on TV. But it's true, I have not had a TV in the house for many, many years. Now, I don't mind telling you, I really do miss TV, and it's always a bit of a thrill when I get to see it again, which isn't often, but one occasion is when I go to the dentist, because we go to a dentist where they have a TV mounted to the ceiling above the dentist chair, so you're watching it distract you from the pain of any work you're having done. And that's fine for normal people who are used to watching TV. The trouble is, for me, it's such a rare treat that once I start watching, I'm immediately hooked back in. I don't want to stop. You know you've got it bad when you're sat in the dentist chair and you don't want to get out. Okay, Ashley, your teeth seem fine. We'll see you again in 6 months. No! Give me a filling! Do some implants, please! There's only 10 minutes left of Judge Judy. Come on, actually, we've got patients waiting. No, give me a root canal.
anything. I can't go now. I'm never going to find out who gets to keep the dog. It got so bad, I kept booking dental appointments just to be able to watch the TV. After a while, they got sick of me turning up for routine checkups, as I eating tons of sweets to try and get some cavities. In the end, I became morbidly obese. Basically, in order to be able to watch a bit of Jeremy Kyle, I had to become the kind of person you'd see on Jeremy Kyle. And actually, it didn't matter what holes I got, because the receptionist got used to my voice. So as soon as they heard it, they didn't want to know. Hello, surgery. Hello, yes, I urgently need an appointment. Is this Blaker? No, 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 please, please don't hang up. I'm absolutely certain I got a hole this time. Okay, Mr. Blaker, can you make Wednesday at 10 o'clock? Let me have a look. Wednesday, 10 o'clock. Holmes under the hammer. No, it really does need to be 4:30 for come dine with me. Just whatever you do, don't go to the dentist during countdown. Trust me, you don't want a dentist poking around in your mouth and hearing, take two from the top and four from anywhere else, please. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Ah! But you can imagine why I want to get a TV again, because never seeing TV can make working in television quite difficult. You know, when you're in a meeting and someone asks, have you seen the new series of Homeland? You can't really reply, no, I haven't seen it because the dentist closed at 6 o'clock. That isn't going to make any sense at all. But I have come up with some quite clever ways to get around this problem. For a start, I'm very good at bluffing. And one great trick I've developed is when there's a big new show, I go online and find one incredibly obscure fact to have up my sleeve in case someone mentions it in a meeting. So if you have a series like, I don't know, Black Mirror, say, what I do is I look it up on IMDb. And then if someone says to me, have you seen Black Mirror? I'm able to say, oh, of course. Wonderful special effects by Graham Aikman. And people go, wow, this guy knows everything. Not only is it really impressive, it also totally intimidates them. They quickly change the subject. I got away with it. Now I do it for every show on TV. Just memorise one credit, you'll always be fine. Have you seen Sherlock? Oh yeah, brilliant makeup by Claire Pritchard. What about Wolf Hall? Oh, the editing by David Blackmore's out of this world. To be honest, I don't know why I bother going to the effort of finding the names, because people probably won't realise if I just make them up myself. Now, the other thing you can do, if someone asks, have you seen a TV show, is just say, I've got it recorded on my DVR, but I haven't got around to watching it yet. Which sounds simple enough, but you can still get caught out with this one. Last year, I went for a meeting at the BBC, and the guy I was seeing asked, what do you think of the glass elevator? So I said, oh, I've got it on my Sky Plus, I'm going to watch it tonight. What I didn't realise, unfortunately, is there isn't actually a show called The Glass Elevator. He literally meant, what did I think of the glass elevator in New Broadcasting House? I had to start making up the details of the show to try and get out of looking like a complete idiot. You're not seeing The Glass Elevator? It's a new game show on Sky. A team of contestants stand in a glass elevator. They answer quiz questions. Every time they get an answer right, they move up to the next floor. Who's the host? Is Michael Aspel still alive? Yeah? Yeah, it's Michael Aspel. Yeah, Michael Aspel. Anyway, that's my struggle. But I think the days of no TV might just be coming to an end, because that Virgin package is looking very attractive to me, and with the new football season starting this weekend, it might just be the time to make the plunge. So next week is Rosh Hashanah. I'll be talking about Rosh Hashanah next week. But for now, let's enjoy the start of not a new Jewish year, but a new football season. Come on the Reds. Please keep the Premier League on Merseyside. Enjoy the weekend. Goodbye.
Comedian Ashley Blaker with his look on life as we've come to know it. And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to all of our guests, to Rabbi Alex Chapper, Dorian Barak, Raymond Simonson, Bridget Grant, comedian Ashley Blaker, and of course our paper review team in the form of Richard Ferrer and Justin Cohen. And we must say thank you to Justin for producing this episode, as well as say thank you to Adam Bradley for his efforts in post-production. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you. You can email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.